So episode 38 is brought to you by Law Chevrolet Boonville, Indiana. LawChevrolet.com is your place to go for any sales service, anything you need, any used or new vehicle. Go give them a look. And when you're looking for a car, call the law. Episode 38 is going to be a unique one for Zach and myself. We're going to do a little bit of Father's Day episode. So, yes, Father's Day has passed a few days, but we're going to knock this thing out, and it's pretty cool. You know, we're going to have Zach's dad, my dad on here, and a short little piece from Easton. But episode 38, we're not going to do a whole lot of results. There was a national event in Bristol. Norwalk is not having sportsman classes. They are having top alcohol funny car and top alcohol dragster, I believe, and that is the closest to the Lucas Oil Series they get. Obviously, saturated pit area. It's been raining for 72 days in a row now. But episode 38, we're going to kick it off right here. We're going to roll straight into the Father's Day interview. So happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there, and we're going to roll the music.
Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
So our special Father's Day edition, we kind of had some technical difficulties in my household, so we're going to do this a little bit differently. I thought Lucas, Zach's son, was going to be with us on the podcast, but I guess it was a misunderstanding. I'm not sure. But I told Easton he gets to be on the podcast, and he's all smiling from ear to ear and looks like a little schoolgirl giggling over here. But Easton, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Hey.
Really, that's the best you've got.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Easton?
I would say today with us is a 7-year-old junior dragster racer. He's actually runnered up a couple of pretty big junior dragster races. One of them was during the 5K, the Mega Bucks at Benton, and one of them was at Muncie, where they had 5K top ball with a bunch of junior dragsters there. And remember that weekend that you ended up at Benton and you were falling asleep? It was like 2:00 in the morning, and I had to wake you up and put you in the race car, and you kept falling asleep in the race car. Remember that?
Yeah, I got to actually run down the track, surprisingly, from me falling asleep.
Yeah. So I was definitely a little worried that to put him in the car, but once I finally got his attention and he woke up enough, I was all right with that. But I don't know, Zach. You're gonna experience that, and it's kind of a wild situation because 1:30 in the morning, and they're running fourth round of junior dragsters, and I think he was down to 3 or 5 or something, and we just had to stay awake for about 12 seconds, so he did it. But what else you got going on? You're a baseball player right now. Your team's not doing too hot.
If we lose this next game, it'll be our 10th loss.
Yeah.
Started out best team in the league after 6 games, and there have been a sharp 0-9 since then.
And next I'm playing football.
Yep.
Which you like better, baseball or football?
Your earbud fell out, didn't it, because you keep pulling away from me. But Zach wants to know if you like baseball or football better. Which one?
Hardly football.
You never played it.
I know. I played at school with 2 actual football players.
So, Easton, what kind of car do you want to race when you get into big cars? Have you thought about that yet? Do you want a dragster or you want a door car or a roadster?
Kind of want an altered.
Nice.
Oh, man. Why
altered? They just look cool.
It's more narrow. It's more narrow and aerodynamics too.
Aerodynamic.
Wow. Pretty good for 7. I didn't know you knew what aerodynamic meant. But
he wants to be like Chet Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, I was listening. I was listening to the Tret Dragon episode.
You listen to these, bud?
Yeah.
Where at? On your phone?
No, like when you're recording, I listen to you.
Yeah, that's true. He was sitting there. So, you started racing this junior dragster when you were 6, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember, you know, what? Whenever you first started racing this thing, what do you remember the most?
I remember when I hopped in, when my dad bought that, I was about to blow. And yeah. As soon as I went to like practice on a track, I think it was in Indy when I first ever ran down the track.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Remember what you did?
What?
Well, I told you, I took you down there and showed you, you know, this is where the 8th mile finish line is. And
remember that.
Yeah, and he goes down for his first test run, and that thing goes 42 mile an hour to the 8th mile and 44 mile an hour to the quarter mile, and it was on the rev limiter the whole way. First pull down the racetrack in a race car went full quarter mile, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Even though, your dad said, don't. But that's neither here nor there. You got it turned off the racetrack all right, and you did all that, didn't you?
Except for...
We had a little incident at Brown County a few weeks ago, and
yeah,
he's trying to get used to this staggered front end in his junior. It doesn't really turn the best certain ways, and sometimes the driver gets distracted too, I think.
It happens. So, I mean, how excited exactly were you when you saw the junior dragster in your living room on Christmas morning?
I was just flipping. I can't describe the words.
I can describe the words of what it took to put the thing in there. Yeah. Right now, every curse word I say cost me 25 cents, so I don't want to go broke, so I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, mm-hmm. Anyway.
I'm basically rich from it.
So, what's your favorite part about racing? You know what?
That time when I went 004.
That time you went
004? Nice. 004.
At Terre Haute.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of a story. I don't know if I said this on the podcast or not, but I'm not sure if I told you or not, Zach. But this first time testing this year, I took him over to Terre Haute on a Friday night, and we made 5 runs, and he was consistently like 320 to 360 on the tree in 5 runs. And I'm like, man, hit the freaking gas. You know, you've got a spot, obviously. Just move it up a little bit, like 3 tenths of a second. And I told him, I said, we're not going home until you're better than 100 on the tree. And as I'm firing his car for one of the last runs, they're announcing that the lanes are closing like right now. And he goes up there and goes 111. Mm-hmm. And I think he didn't even have a chance to get out. I mean, we parked down by the turnoff and he didn't have a chance to get out of his car before I was back there with the golf cart. Took the belt off of it, threw it on the golf cart, and drove right back to the staging lanes. He still had his helmet on, going back up the return road with the junior in tow. And I told him, I said, unless you want to spend the night here, better than 100. I don't care if you're freaking red, hit the tree. And he goes up there, and he's 004, and I think he just let off the gas because he was probably doing a little celebration inside the race car because you could see it up on the scoreboard. But
it was 004.
Or 004, excuse me. Sorry.
Okay.
Fourth digit.
Yeah. Not 3 digits.
So, Easton, do you think your daddy's luck with cars and trailers, do you think it follows you? Do you tend to break a lot of stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he touches my finger, he's going to break it. Touch it.
No.
Touch it.
Well, the good thing about that is, buddy, you'll have a lot of experience in how to fix stuff. You'll know how everything works.
You find out what you're
good at. Very valuable information to know.
Yep.
So let's finish this thing up and tell me your favorite racing story of going racing with your dad. Where'd we go? What'd we do? How'd we do? When you think about racing stories with your dad, what's the first one that comes to mind?
The most memorable one in there. The most memorable one in there is... what's the name of the track?
Where were we? How far away was it?
I think it was in Bristol or Terre Haute again.
Bristol and Terre Haute's two completely
different. I don't know. I think it was in Bristol or Terre Haute.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was in Terre Haute.
Tell the story and I'll tell everybody where we were at.
It was in Bristol, and I got down to the final round to race my buddy Jacob that came racing with us.
That's Benton. I-57 drag strip, yep.
Yeah. And I came down to the finals, and I had to race my buddy because I got to buy the final round. It's either me or him that got the buy. And I think I went red. No, I didn't go red.
I think that's one of those races where the crew chief messed up the dial in just a little bit.
Yeah.
Might have broke out a couple of thou.
Yeah, and he broke out by 1,000, I think, and I broke out like 3,000, I think.
That was a pretty cool day, though, because who was crew chief in Jacob's car?
You.
So what did I have to do?
You had to stage both of us up.
Yeah, that was a trip. But, Bud, thanks for hanging out with us on the podcast for our Father's Day episode. Anything else you want to tell everybody that's listening? Anything you want to say? Anybody you'd like to thank?
We just thank you for everybody that likes us, likes our podcasts, and thank you for your support. And that'll be it for me.
There you go.
Man, that's awesome. Thanks for plugging the podcast, buddy.
Yeah, how about that? So that'll round it out with Easton. We're going to roll into the dads here in just a second. So, segue into that here in a minute. And we'll be right back with that.
Bye. Have a good time.
For Father's Day this year, we're doing something a little bit different. It's kind of unique. You know, all the credit to Zach. It's Zach's idea. But Zach has his dad, Billy, and my dad, Pete, is here with me. It's kind of cool. We're going to interview our dads for Father's Day. And we both come from racing families. You know, our dad started the itch for us. They won't help us scratch it anymore for some reason, but anyhow, so Zach's dad, Billy, my dad, Pete. Hey, guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Hope we can teach you something after all this.
Oh, mercy.
This is how that whole episode's going to go. Just so you know, my dad's going to take little innuendo digs at me, and it's going to just continue on. So.
Well, glad to have you both on here. And, yeah, you know, I thought it would be a good idea. I know that Father's Day this last weekend, so many fathers and sons are involved in racing together. Father's got sons involved in racing for generations. So honored to have you both on here. Well, I guess just to start out, I'll go to my dad. I'll go to Billy. If you can, just kind of start us out from the beginning. What year did you start racing? In what vehicle and what class?
Wow. Started racing in 1965, and I had a 49 Chevy business coupe with a 283 in it. And with time, it was probably a degasser. And that's when you actually raced to the end of the track. There wasn't any ET racing. You took the size of your motor and divided it into the weight of your car. You got weighed when you got there, and you claimed a certain number of cubic inches. And you ran cars of similar weight to cubic inch. And whoever got to the end won the race. And that went on till the 70s, 80s, mid-80s when the ET stuff really took over. Much like Competition Eliminator if you went to a national event. Started down in a track in Owensboro, Kentucky, not Windy Hollow, but another track pre-Windy Hollow. It was the first time I drove it down there, and the second time we towed it with a tow bar. And then the next year I had built a 56 Chevy Gasser just for racing.
So back then, you know, obviously, there was not a whole lot of electronics and stuff back then, and it kind of separated the men from the boys, you know, especially in the early 70s, late 60s. But what innovation do you think really changed the sport. You know, I mean, we've got delay boxes and pretty much put it on autopilot and let it go. What was the most difficult? Or, I mean, what did you see parts failure wise that maybe the automatic shifter came along, or actually a good automatic transmission came along that saved catastrophic failure or driver error or anything?
Well, if you are racing to get to the finish line first, you'd have a standard transmission. You wouldn't have an automatic. So started out with a 3-speed, then went to a 4-speed. And then Mr. Doug Nash came up with a 5-speed, and you had a shifter that you went back and forth and got it up to the top, and then you just slammed it back and forth to go through the 5 gears. And so it was different racing than what we have today. The automatics are nice, and you can put a number on the window, and that's all the faster you have to go. But if you really had to go all the way, you would have a standard transmission. So it was different. Nowadays, you know, love the ET racing. It's fine. We got, instead of having 30 cars, you got 130 cars show up, and everybody has a chance to win. In that category, if you had a lot of money and you were racing degas, you had a definite advantage over other folks. That's just in the all-out racing. When ET racing, you know, love it. I've got every possible thing you can have on my car, and I let go of the button, and the pedal's already on the floor, and all those things, and love them all.
So probably torque converter technology really kind of just changed the whole face of the sport, didn't it?
If you really wanted to go fast, you wouldn't have an automatic and a torque converter. But good torque converters and the power glides and all the internals that they stuff in those cases now, those are all good things. We never had to wear any sunscreen or anything, because we were always underneath our cars replacing U-joints or ring and pinions or clutches. So it was really high maintenance back then.
That's why you'll never see me with a sunburn.
That's right. That's Jake's life right there that you just described, Dad, is underneath the race car all the time.
So my dad, I've heard, you know, countless stories, because we live in a small town of 2,000 people. You know, we both born and raised here. My dad had a Colt is what kind of what put him on the racing scene. And I kind of want to talk about that, because I don't know what combination was in it. I have no idea, but he had the fastest car in high school, I guess, supposedly. I don't really know. Apparently it's a big debate between him and a few other guys. But he actually was like an original street outlaw, I guess, if you want to put it that way. His racing did not start out at the racetrack. I'm sure. I don't know if your dad's ever been down that road. I'm sure there's a time for it and there's a time not for it. But there's a stretch of highway out here, and I don't know how far is that straight? Probably a mile and a half.
It's probably a mile and a half straight away. Yeah, that was a Friday night thing. Everybody went there to put some money on your car and see who had what and change something for next week. And several times the police would interrupt us a little bit, but other than that, we had pretty good safe times on Friday nights, and until it got bad enough where the police knew where we were at and had a few tickets and a couple cars impounded. And after that, you know, then we had to go street race or go to off street racing to find a racetrack, because nobody wanted to pay for our insurance and gas money anymore.
So this Colt, what was so special about it? Because I don't know. I've heard mixed stories about it, and it was a sleeper, right?
Yeah, it was a 74 Dodge Colt, and it was a manual car. And, of course, had a triple disc clutch in it and different cylinder head and pistons, you know, just like any other race car would have, you know. Made good horsepower and liked a lot of RPMs. And as anybody knows, weight to horsepower ratio, as long as you got traction, then you got a rocket most of the time. Downfall is the brakes probably weren't the best, because, you know, it's 74 brakes on it, but if you're racing, you need brakes anyway.
No bracket racing on the street.
No. But it's just kind of, you know, kind of like Billy said too, you know, that's what the car you had, it was who got to the end first. Didn't look how sloppy you got there. As long as you're fast to get to the end first, you got the money that was laying out there. So that's what it started out all about.
Yeah, when we were racing back then in this category where you divided cubic inches into weight, we probably had 30 to 35 cars show up. because it was it's expensive and it was hard on parts. One of the cool things we did is you would run the whole race and you would have a winner, and that, and then that winner would get the money, and sometimes it was $200, and then they would sit out and you would, they would run the whole race again because we only had 30 cars, so in order to put it on a program, so they just ran two complete races. So the runner-up actually, they had to do the whole second round to get the second place money.
Oh my!
So that's a lot of parts wear and tear, you know.
Yeah.
Doubling up.
One night at Chandler, I won the first thing, and but in the final of the first pass, the guy, instead of putting 5 tenths in the tree or for the difference between I was running an e-gasser and a degasser, he put 5 seconds. And so I came up and they said, well, you know, we think Fuzzy's got a gun, so we don't want to go down and talk to him. We're going to give you first round money, $200, and you can run second round. So I won $325 that night. And I
good money back then.
The most. Great. Most money I had ever seen at one time.
Because we own race cars.
Yes. We invest in the race cars. Believe me, that $325 went right back in the car.
So I'm going to throw a question at Pete, you know, because I kind of I threw this question at Easton, too. I mean, obviously, you know that Jake is famous for his trailer tire luck and braking parts. Is this something that happened to you as well? Is it hereditary where it started? Even before you?
No, not really. I mean, I usually check to make sure, you know, that lug nuts are tight, wheel bearings are good, make sure the tire's not bald on the inside. Maybe not put, you know, 3 race cars and a 2 race car trailer with a golf cart, you know, with, 4-wheeler, whatever you stuff in there, and try to drive 1,000 miles, you know, expect the tires to stay on there. I mean, several times they showed up at the racetrack and it'd be a tire, you know, triple axle trailer and be a tire missing off of it and never knew where it went. So I'm not sure who found the tire, who caught the tire or what, but I think maybe it's a cloud that follows you, you know. If you try to do the right thing, put tires on there, you probably should check the wheel bearings, too, when you're doing it.
Well, it's kind of it makes it for a fun game on the way home, see if you can find the tire you lost on the way down.
I can tell you a tire story, and this is an honest truth. After all this tire scenario went on, he parked his car at work on the street parking, and he left and went somewhere, and before he left he came back all upset, said whoever parked behind me, it must have been that drunk guy that lives over there, he mashed in the back of my car, my car's all mashed in. So he left. So I thought, well, I'll check it out. So he left, and I left work, you know, to go home. I walked over to his car, and sure enough, the whole back bumper cover on this Honda was all caved in, bent the trunk. Well, I looked over in the yard right next to this car, and there's a 8-lug trailer tire that the lug nuts were all hollow or sloppy, worn out in. And that trailer tire came off somebody's trailer going up the street, and it smashed the back of his car. That's what kind of trailer tire luck he had. So I'm not sure it's just on him. It's just trailer tires in general. He probably ought to just pay somebody to tow his stuff somewhere and not drive or have his own trailer.
That's a true statement. I've never been so mad in my life. And he calls me. He's like, hey, I found the tire that hit your car.
Well, I took a picture to make sure I could show him, you know, what actually happened to his car, because he never would have believed it. On a positive note, we had a really nice, you know,
I had a good spare after that, yeah.
8 washers under the lug nuts, and you got one.
Well, at least 4.
So, Dad, I'll throw a question back at you. As far as kind of going with the story of kind of my dad's life and where I came along and first went to the racetrack was way out east in New Jersey. So, I ask, what was the, you know, some of the biggest differences you saw in moving from the Midwest in the early 80s to out east in New Jersey? What was some of the biggest difference in the racing that you saw?
Actually, when that happened is when they stopped having modified eliminator and then super gas came on the scene, and I was busy moving and busy starting a new job, and I had to convert then to instead of running e-gas and degas in at the Nationals, all of a sudden that disappeared. It went into comp eliminator, but it really wouldn't work in comp eliminator. You couldn't be competitive. So then they started super gas, and super street and super comp finally showed up also. And I had to convert from racing in the gasser class to the to the Super Gas, and that event, that was a quite a struggle at first, figuring out how to do that, and that took some time. So that was the difference. As far as the difference, if I was running on the in the national circuit, so I hadn't run out east yet, but the national circuit, the national races are pretty much all the same, Midwest or in the east. But that was quite a rude awakening when they stopped having modified eliminator. They announced it at the U.S. Nationals. Gosh, must have been 90 or 91. And I didn't know what I was going to do. All of a sudden, your class disappears. So I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Mm-hmm. So back when you first started running Super Gas, then what was the first way you tried to slow the car down? Was it straight to a throttle stop, or was it something else? You just try to put weight in it?
When I was running in the gas class, that was very expensive. I was running 11,000 RPM and things, and you really didn't need to do that to run Super Gas. So I ended up selling the 302 that made about 700 and some odd horsepower, and invested in a big block in a Powerglide. And the first shot at the Powerglide is I completely changed the routing in the valve body myself so it would shift by itself. But I modified the governor and threw it out of balance. And that's what broke in half at Great Meadows when the transmission locked up and I got to see ground sky in a sod field. So that wasn't much fun, but it was the end of the year and I gathered up all the fiberglass parts and put them all in the trailer. And by the time the spring came around in New Jersey, I'd gotten the car back together.
So I don't know if we have ever wrecked a car, so to speak, knock on wood, but I've seen plenty of times we've been really damn close. My dad just told a story about going to the Halloween Classic at Norwalk, and he had a 32 Bantam altered at the time, and I got a big block in it, right? And still, when the Halloween Classic was quarter mile, and it was probably 37, 38 degrees.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah. And what it was, down to 5 or 7 cars or something, and
we got way down into the 3 or 4 days into it.
And the Halloween Classic's known to run all through the night, 3-4 o'clock in the morning finish.
Yeah, you make your dollar first pass at you may go at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, while your second pass is at 1 o'clock in the morning before you get through all the cars. That's if everybody keeps their stuff together and don't have to clean the track up a bunch. But yeah, I'd went there and got through, probably 700 or 800 cars through it, and and it was like probably 2 o'clock in the morning. Lucky, maybe 30, 32 degrees if we were lucky. And it's one of those issues where you get on starting line and you breathe one time and your whole shield fogs up on the inside. I had the great idea that if I open my shield a little bit, let a little bit of that out, it'd be good. Well, what I didn't know, at 160 mile an hour or so, that windshield on my helmet would tuck my head back where I couldn't see anything. So I've been there long enough, I thought I was just going to run it out until I saw somebody's wind light, because I wasn't going to lift and take a chance on having to go home, Somehow I made it through it, but I'm not sure how I couldn't tell you what lane I was in when I finished, so it was a pretty wild ride, and I guess must have been going straight and somebody with me, because it was a wild ride. And not like the next round after that, I red lit, so after, it was over anyway, but I got down pretty far into it, and that was a fun time. I think Jake was probably 7 or 8 years old, maybe 9. He had a fun time, so it was a good memorable time for all of us, I think.
And that car is very, or the Altra was very well known to be handling at times. We got dogs here. But yeah, that thing was a handful, and whenever he first bought it, he was going through a bunch of stuff with it, and it had a front brake on it, right?
It had front brakes, yes, and it also had a handbrake for the front. What it was.
Yeah.
You don't want to use that. I learned that.
he grabbed the front handbrake on an altered, and it about broke his wrist.
Yeah, it'll basketball steer at 100 plus mile an hour, so it's a pretty good handful.
So, Dad, I'm going to ask you a racing story question, and because we had Jimmy Terhune on here a little while back, and he told the story. So I want, and because we were talking about you, and I wanted to hear it from your perspective of the wrecking the car story and getting the trailer loan.
This was in 1967. His father-in-law, my good friend, he ran a car called the Goat. and it was, I think, gosh, it was pretty new. It might have been a 66 Dart, 65 or 66 Dart with a small block in it. And I was racing down at Owensboro, the old track, not Windy Hollow. I made the ladder bars out. At that time, ladder bars ran all the way up to the front of the front door. It's hard to imagine some of these things now. We didn't have great tires, and you wanted to get the front end lifted as best you could. And I made them out of something.
That's why they call them ladder bars, because they're as long as the six-foot ladder?
Yeah.
Is that where they originated from?
I have no idea, but when you look at old gassers, the ladder bars are very, very long. And the tires, we had like 7-inch wide tires was the biggest ones we could buy. And the car sat real high in the air so that you could get as good a weight transfer as you could. And those ladder bars, they were made out of wishbones out of a 1944. No one knows what that is, but that's okay. But they're cast, and they broke, and the rear end wound up and then unwound and then turned the car crazy. And I went end over end and sideways and slid backwards into a tree, and no roll cage, a Jeep seat, a World War II fighter plane seat belt, luckily, and a bit of a helmet. And the top, when the top caved in, it pushed me down, which was great. And then it just kind of beat my back after that. But at least I was forward instead of laying backwards. And I survived it and spent the night in the hospital. And the next day, Jimmy's father-in-law said, you know, I'm going to drive my car home, and because we towed it on the ground. That was very popular back then. Most everybody towed their cars to the drag strip on the ground, just hooked up a tow barn. And he lent me the trailer, and that was very, very nice of him. My brother, with the 57 Chevy that I now have, he and I went down there and we hooked up on the trailer and towed it home, and was able to save the engine, transmission, and the rear end, but not much else. So I hope that's similar to the story that Jimmy told. Mm-hmm. But it was awful nice of his father-in-law to loan me a trailer, because I had no way of getting that car home.
So, Billy, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. When Zach decided, I mean, he obviously has been racing for a while with the junior dragster and stuff, but whenever he finally hopped in a big car, you know, how long did it take him to adapt? And, you know, as a father, you know, how cool was that to see him, you know, for A, not having to work on those stupid junior dragsters anymore, because I know exactly what that's all about. But to put a small block Chevy in something instead of a 5-horse Briggs, you know, what was that like for you as a dad to see that transition?
Well, there's a story there. A lady had an old Cutlass and lived out in the west side and thought that Zach should drive the Cutlass, and they were working on it, and it was not a very safe car, but it was a race car, and Zach was all excited about getting to drive in a full-size car. And so his mom and I had to talk about it at the time, and we went out and bought a car, because I think a schlump should be in a schlump car, not in somebody else's car. And it is nice to have a Holley carburetor and a Holley fuel pump and an MSD ignition, and have nothing to do with those little Briggs and Stratton motors and clutches and belts and all that silly stuff that you have to go through with a junior dragster. So, and that is the same car that he's driving today. He bought it from us as time went on.
Been a work in progress ever since. And it's it makes it from point A to point B. Sometimes a wind light comes on. But, sure glad to see that car. I remember, you know, seeing the car for the first time, and Dad had bought it. And, man, I was super excited and ready to get out there and go, and, you know, started out just like in trophy or whatever for the first couple of times, and was running like 770s, and just thought I was just like John Force or something. And then it just all went from there. I mean, you know, it's just been a constant constant steady buildup of equipment to try to get it where it is today, and it's definitely decent. We broke a lot of parts learning what not to do, that's for sure. Oh, I want another story from Dad. I wanted everybody to hear was tell him the toaster truck story coming back from Indy whenever it put a hole in a piston.
That was a long time ago. I had a 57 sedan delivery race car with a 455 Olds engine in it. I think I was running C gas at the time. And I had a ton and a half 47 Chevy truck, and it was very popular back then to have a truck and you would drive the car up on some ramps. And we were coming back from, we went up to Indianapolis to race. This had like a 216 cubic inch six cylinder in it and a granny gear and all that stuff. It was but it was okay as long as you stuck around here. And we got out on the highway and we were on the way home and we blew a hole in the top of the piston and it was smoking, and we put all the oil that we had in for the race car, and we got to up on 41 where the popcorn place is, and we pulled over and it was almost completely out of oil. So we drained the oil out of the race car, poured it in the tow truck, and we made it the rest of the way home.
But just smoking a little bit.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah, smoking a lot. But it was the way to go to the races back then. Everybody had a ton and a half truck, and the car was up on the ramps on the back. Not a bad way to go, but motor home and an enclosed trailer is a better way.
Yeah, I think that I would agree with that, but The old ramp trucks are kind of, you know, I wouldn't have a problem owning one whatsoever, even though it probably wouldn't, you know, make it to the highway before it broke. But
of course, you don't have to worry about trailer tires if you get a ramp truck. See, you just drive on the back and you can worry about trailer tires blowing.
Yeah.
See your angle.
Yeah. I had a story also that, yeah. So speaking of story time, we were going on family vacation one year, okay? And the points at the local racetrack was rounding down, and I think that's whenever it was still at Action Dragway. My dad raced at Terre Haute quite a bit when it was called Action Dragway. Mm-hmm. And there was an engine that he and a buddy of his drove to Oregon and bought. So wow. I'll let him tell this story, but our vacation departure time was hindered by a few hours.
Yeah, you know, it was down at the end of the season at Terre Haute, and of course ET Finals was coming up, so you know, we had a good spot in that and had a good dependable car, we thought. And, but anyway, ended up motor gave up, so we had to
find I want to start the story on how to get there. Yeah, this is what we want to hear.
How to get where?
How you went and got it.
Oh, well, we had to borrow a pickup truck, you know, to drive to Medford, Oregon to buy a motor that we found on the internet. Some guy on the internet had it for sale. It was a 496 Chevy motor and $6,000 or $7,000, you know, and it was a lot of money back then. But I thought, you know, hey, we can just go get that motor, throw it in there. Car will still be fast, you know, and be a lot of fun. Well, we drove, you know, 24 hours a day, of course, never stopped for just fuel and maybe to use the bathroom once or twice. But it was like 3,000 miles there, 3,000 miles back. Well, so once we got there, got the motor bought, it was all good, and loaded the motor on the tail of the truck. The truck had a camper shell, and then we had the great idea, we'd put a sleeping bag in the bed of the truck, and one of us could sleep, but one of us drove, you know, so we'd get back in time to get this motor in the car. And, you know, if you've ever rode with anybody without any sleep and wake up and not know where you're at and beat on the side of the camper shell window because you think you're going to run off the road, it was quite an experience that we had. But we ended up making it there, making it back, had a few little hiccups along the way.
Didn't you get pulled over?
No, we had a blowout. We went to a truck stop to get gas and went inside.
You guys, you had a blowout. Just so you know, mm-hmm. It might be here right up there.
I actually went to the truck stop first just to get fuel. We walked inside, and I think they thought we were truckers. They gave us a free shower. So either we stunk or they knew that we, you know, looked like truckers. So we took them up on the shower, got back in the truck. It was all nice and clean. We were in Nevada, I think, then, and like a 8-lane highway. And we're doing 70 mile an hour. Well, I noticed the seat started vibrating. I thought, that wasn't like that before, was it? It got a little bit worse. Well, of course, one of the rear tires exploded. Well, it was a borrowed truck, and the spare tire was underneath of the Chevy truck. Had no way to get the tire down. The cable was froze on the tire, and we're beating it to death trying to get the tire off of it. And a state police officer pulls up on the highway behind us and tries to see what kind of trouble we're having. And he was really cool about it. After he ran us through the ringer, he stood behind us and told us when cars were coming, you know, and pull our legs back in so we didn't get ran over. But other than that, we made it out there and back. Put the motor in the car. Motor ran great. I think I made probably 5 or 6 passes in it, and we figured out when the block was filled, it had a good weak spot at the top that knocked a hole in it. So it was a $6,000 experience. It lasted about, I don't know, maybe a weekend at the racetrack, and that was the weekend we were going on vacation. So, yeah, I tore it apart at the racetrack, took the motor all apart because I didn't know how sick I was going to be while I was on vacation. I was right. I think we ended up getting a set of heads out of it. Wasn't bad.
And I think if I remember right, you said you were about – and this is probably a little bit more vulgar terms, but about to rent an effing plane and drop this effing engine on top of that effing guy's house.
Yeah, I wasn't going to drive it back. I wasn't going to drive it back to Oregon, but I wouldn't have a problem hiring somebody to drop it off for me. It wasn't even a good paperweight. It would have been a good roof magnet, you know, for somebody to drive it to fall through. But other than that, it wasn't a good paperweight at all.
And I'll never forget, because I think it was the driver's side that blew up, because I'm sitting there, ready to go on vacation. We still had everything packed. I think Tony was going to take the truck and trailer back, and I think my mom drove separate or something to the racetrack. But it was in the Vega that I raced today, and that's something I'll never forget, because I think when the officer pulled up and you guys are changing the tire, there's what, a bunch of no-dose packets and stuff.
Oh yeah, no-dose packets on the dash. There's a handgun under the center armrest, you know. And back then they didn't shake us all down to see what we had with us or anything. But once they saw our frustration and what we were doing, I think they understood that, you know, there's bigger fish to fry out there. We were just a couple hillbillies trying to get back to Indiana. So.
And if I remember right, there was a Sunoco shootout in Indianapolis, and you ended up having a problem with the slick, right? And you ran a couple of rounds of two different sizes or something like that. Or maybe it wasn't a Sunoco shootout race. Maybe it was your brother. Heck, I don't know. But at one time, you didn't realize until it was over that the tire you put on didn't match the other one.
I've been more than once if we was at the racetrack, and, you know, back then we had slicks with tubes in them, you know, and the tube would go bad or something. We just tuck the tube inside the tire, put a tubeless valve stem in it, air back up, and finish her out with the tube wrestling around inside the tire, you know. But it's came a long way since then, you know. Back when I started, all you had to know how to do was start the car and steer it, you know. Now these days, the car does all that for you. A lot of good experiences, a lot of fun. I think last time I went racing, I went to Terre Haute, and
Jake was driving
somebody's dragster, and I took the Vega over there, and he told me I was too old, rusty. It'd been like 12 years since I've been in the car.
This fire suit.
Every round he was telling me, you got lucky. Next round, you got lucky. I was like 4 or 5 rounds into it, and he said, don't follow me up there. So I think maybe it was worth my lucky. He wasn't lucky.
Well, no, I was thinking that I might have had some invested in your entry too, so I don't want to put that money out either. But no, and you guys, I mean, Billy, you'll know this, but he pulled the fire suit out of the closet, and his fire suit is an old Worth fire suit. You know, the old blue ones with the red letters on them.
And, well, there you go.
And what happened was, I didn't tell him. I had a K&R Pro Cube in there, and it didn't have the second hit turned on. So if I flinched, I can go off the bottom if I got back on it before it released. Well, he flinched and got back on it.
He went off the top.
And he let go on the top the second time and about broke his neck. So I'm sitting there trying to want – I was behind him in the water box. I'm wondering what in the world's going on, you know, what just happened. And I think he got down to 6 or 7 cars, and I think I won in the dragster that night. But we almost had a double up, and – he knocked the rust off, and it wasn't too shabby, actually. He caught me a little off guard.
Yeah, I'm not sure he didn't, you know, mean not to tell me about it, you know, couldn't double hit it and leave on the top bulb, you know. But it was a good lesson. I learned it now, so I guess he wants to go back again. We'll try it over.
Oh man, yeah, that's I guess I put too much faith in you not to flinch, I guess. So maybe next time.
So Dad, one thing I thought about, we've joked about several times, and the story of when I was a little kid, and I was just, I was playing with screwdrivers, something somehow. I decided it would be a good idea to put the screwdriver through the holes in the wheels on the race car. And I'll let you kind of take it from there. It didn't want to move really well.
No, it sure didn't. It was just in the garage there, and you were out there messing around, and I was tightening the lug nuts up and things and messing around, and next thing you know, I tried to load the car, and it wouldn't roll, and in the Ford holes instead of the Chevy holes, on the mags, we got the double bolt pattern. You had shoved screwdrivers in there, and then catching on the calipers, and the thing wouldn't move. Just another one to find.
Mm-hmm.
I got another Duke story.
Okay.
That's Duke is Jimmy's father-in-law. He's passed away, but he saved me one other time. We had a big rain out down at Bowling Green, and Donnie and I and Duke went to a place called Uncle Sam's, and you can just kind of figure out what that kind of place was. And my partner, Donnie, went off and left me. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, when the ladies quit dancing, I said, Duke, I'm stuck here. So once again, he saved me and took me back to the motel. So Duke not only lent me a trailer in 67, somewhere in the 90s, he once again saved me and took me back to the motel.
He's a good man. That's awesome.
Yeah, you can edit that part out.
No, it's okay. No, not at all.
Part of it. That's that reminded me, you know, my dad had a guy that always went racing with us whenever I was a lot younger, and his name is Tony. They're still friends this day. Whenever I first started racing, Tony still was rebuilding carburetors and stuff for us, because that's what he did. You know, he was pretty good with a carburetor back then, and he would buy a 24-pack of Coors Light bottles on the way to the racetrack, and on the way home, he would have 24 road signs he would hit with every single bottle. I mean, the same ones every time. And, you know, yes, it was littering. Yes, I know. Sorry. I didn't do it. Tony did. But I remember sitting in the back seat, and he drank 24 bottles of Coors Light and didn't miss a sign the whole way home. You know, I can remember my dad swerving and everything, and Tony just go right with it. And he'd knock out 24 of those. And, you know, we went everywhere. I remember going to Norwalk when I was younger for, like, the Halloween Classic, and we had the 48-foot trailer, much like what Billy had, I guess, and Zach's got now. And we all slept in the bunk. Well, we cracked the door open a little bit, but we had a 5-gallon propane tank with one of the range burners on top. That was our heat. And we'd wake up about halfway through the night and, you know, be dizzy and all that. And we cracked the door open a little more, cracked the window open. But, you know, that's some of the stuff that I won't forget being younger at the racetrack. And every year at the Halloween Classic, Norwalk had a junior dragster raffle. They hung a junior dragster on the wall in the souvenir shop on the what would be the pit, the spectator side now, the grass side of Norwalk, so the left lane side. They had a big souvenir stand out there, and they hung a junior dragster there, and they sold raffle tickets, I think $1 a piece or something, and they made money on that thing. I'm telling you what, you know, it's something I remember being younger and going to the racetrack, and I think I markered up your trailer, no, shoe polish in your brand new trailer carpet or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had carpet on the trailer floor, and then Diamondette runners front to back to drive the cars in on, and I guess he decided the Diamondette runners front to back was more like a racetrack, I guess, for his toy cars that he has. So he painted all of them shoe polish white, you know, just for me to come back and see the mess that I couldn't get off aluminum Diamondette. It was a pretty good experience. I probably still only one for that one. I'm just waiting until he gets something I can mess up. So. Most of the time when he was that age at the racetrack, you know, he made more money than I did. He would go over to the fence and be betting dollars in each car with kids. And the time the race was over, he'd get the truck, have $15, $20, you know, $20 in ones in his pocket, you know, and I'd ask him where he got the money from. And he was betting who was going to win lane to lane, you know, from the finish line with a bunch of kids. So he's made more money than I did, Grayson. But he did cost me a little bit, too, you know, on his ideas of racing and what was a good idea and bad, you know. I didn't lose trailer tires, but, you know, I had to replace a lot of floors and that kind of stuff, you know.
So, Pete, what do you think about Jake's announcing career? He's been quite successful, and now he's in the big show at NHRA National Events. A lot of people like to hear him talk at the racetrack. What do you think about that?
Well, I've never had a problem talking, really, I don't think. A lot of problems listening. I mean, most kids have a lot of problems listening and have no problem talking. So he's fell in that category just fine. I think that, you know, he finally started out in a dirt car, you know, when he was 14. He had to sign some papers, so he you know, a legal age to drive, you know, and I was just glad he grew out of that stage, you know, because he's going to get stuck in dirt cars. I got tired of putting on control arms and fenders and getting mud scraped out of the car every week so he could drive it again and smash it again the next week. So, so he's really came a long way, and, you know, deal with the NHRA is a blessing and a good thing for him. You know, he loves racing, loves people, and always easy to talk to. So got to be proud of him for that. I mean, it took a lot of hard work to get there. So if you want to question me on how good he can talk, or, you know, talk his way into something out of something, he's always been good at that.
And, you know, I when I'm not on the road, which is anymore, not a whole lot, you know, I get to go work for my dad. So I get to work for him every day. And, you know, we've got a lot going on right now. But the lenience of working for him is a little bit different. You know, I've been an EMT for almost 6 years now, and I only had a certain amount of hours and days off, and I work 24-hour shifts, but, you know, it makes it a lot easier now that I can go in and out. Yeah, he still gives me a lot of crap for it. He'll call me on a Friday or text me and be like, hey, thanks for scheduling that transmission job. It just showed up. We had no idea it was coming. I'm like, I did. I'm not going to be there. But, no. It makes it a lot nicer. You know, I'm very fortunate that, I don't know how long has the shop been open, 30 years?
Yeah, 30, almost. 31 years, yeah.
And, you know, it's been there, the same spot for 30 years, or maybe 31, and we don't really know. There's a newspaper article with a date clipped off of it, but my dad's got a twin brother, Ed, that, you know, when my dad opened it up, Ed started working for him, and he probably worked there 22 years, 23 years, and he went off and did his own thing, and we always went racing together, and that's why we had a two-car trailer. Ed would drive, when the Altered was owned, Ed would drive one, and my dad would drive, or Ed would drive the Vega, I think, right? And my dad would drive the Altered. And,
he had a Nova also.
Yeah, he had a 76 Nova. Yeah. Said full tilt boogie on the side of it.
Nice.
But, it makes it nice that, you know, it's lenient, and, you know, I try to do what I can when I'm there, but in the wintertime, you know, I'm there pretty much all the time.
Yeah, and he kind of grew up there. I mean, when he was 3 or 4 years old, he came there.
Oh,
there,
here we go.
He was there every day, you know, so he tore stuff apart, scratched stuff up, you know, that kind of stuff. Always got rid of your tools you're looking for, you never could find. You know, until he got, you know, to be 12, 13, he figured out that it was kind of work there, so they didn't want to get away from there fast as he could. So it's good that he came back and, you know, figured out that working is not all that bad if you get paid for it, so. If I just get him to do some work, they get paid.
So. I think what was I doing? I was probably 5 or 6 years old one day, and my dad got a phone call. He's like, hey, your son's out by the highway. I think I was flipping everybody off as they went by.
Yeah, you're sitting out front on a bench, and you're flipping everybody off as they were driving by. So
I didn't know what it meant. I just thought it meant hey or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was included or not, but him and his brother had a yard sale all the stuff in my office. Out front of the shop when I was working, he was selling stuff. They had this big pile of money out there and couldn't tell me what to sell. So, you know, good times, you know. I'm pretty sure he probably stuck a screwdriver in somebody's tire or something, too, somewhere.
That's probably my problem now. Karma's coming back.
That's what it is.
So Billy, kind of tell us about the Ace of Spades and how that came about, and the whole Trackmaster balancing thing, because you've been doing that quite a while, right?
Yes, sir. I've over 14,000 motors, and it's started the business in the early 90s when I moved back to Indiana, and it's still going strong. I still got a shop full of work. Don't need any more customers, so get your engines balanced wherever you get them balanced, but I have a nice group of folks that depend on me to keep their engines balanced, and balanced top fuelers, balanced motors for all of Germany and England. I don't know how many speed records at Salt Flats that I've balanced, but pretty much been something that it was hard to find somebody to do it right, and I enjoy doing it, and bought some good equipment, and I worked very hard at it. So that's the Trackmaster balancing. As far as the Ace of Spades, it is a wonderful car. It's probably 20 years old, maybe even a little older. It's a full chassis car. I had a 57 Chevy, and I was in partners with my buddy Donnie Smith for 25, 30 years. And at some point, he decided that he didn't want to go drag racing anymore, which that's okay. After 30 years, that was a good choice for him. And so we had this 57 Chevy, and it was very, very nice. And a millionaire was flying back from the Nationals in his private jet, and I had put it in the National Dragster, and he paid us a bunch of money for it, and I gave half to Donnie, and we went our ways. And I bought another 67 Nova up in Terre Haute, and it wasn't all. It was more like a super stocker, and it was okay. My wife said, "Get on the internet and buy you a car," because I was building one at a time and it wasn't going to get done in time. And I had that one for a little while, and the guy up the road just kept saying, "When are you going to sell me that car? When are you going to sell me that car?" And the Ace of Spades was on the internet, and I kept watching it and kept watching it. It's a gorgeous car. And one day the guy dropped $5,000. So I called the guy down the road and I said, "Are you serious?" And he said, "I've already got the check written." So I called the guy up and came from Iowa and met him somewhere on the other side of Missouri, and been very happy with the car. It's totally different than when I bought it 10 years ago. But it's the chassis, the good part was there. The bones were there. And he had it set up where it would stand straight up in the air. He was running Super Street with it, and then drop it and then power it back on and run out on the big end. And anyway, we got all the blocks taken off. When it would drop, it would hit the blocks and spark, and got all that off of it. And it doesn't do wheel stands. It's got wheelie bars on it now, and it just comes out about 9 inches off the ground and just carries them and heads on down the track. And it's a very nice car, and I'm very happy to have it. I don't know much more to tell you about it. It's got a weird rear end in it. It's got a 57 Oldsmobile rear end, so I have to keep track of the gears on the internet. Whenever some of those gears come up, I need to get them, because they really don't make them anymore. And I want to change it out, but that's such a big expense. And it works. It's a 9.3 ring gear on it. It's actually bigger than a Ford. It's bigger than a Dana 60. But it is a hard rear end to find parts for.
Yeah, and I think whenever I've kind of started racing, I don't know, probably I was 17, so 2010, 2011, I came out of Alliance, and it must have been a weekend Chandler was closed, because you guys just came up there out of nowhere, and I think you won. I don't remember, but it's the first time I ever seen the car, and I'm like, who is that? You know, I've never seen the car. I've been to Chandler a couple of times, and I guess I didn't recognize it, or you weren't there that day. But you were like, I think you were like 9 total or something the final. And now that's when I realized that, you know, you and Zach were father son, and I thought that was pretty neat. But I think Zach did pretty well that day too. But yeah, that car showed up, and it was I think it was over from the start. I mean, it had a pretty good day from what I remember, but I think the last 3 or 4 runs, the car was like low dead on or something. And that's something I probably won't forget, because it's one of my first big car races ever at Lions, which is now Wagler.
Well, that's a good story. I'm not sure it was me, but it's a good story. No,
it was definitely you.
I went several rounds that night, but I'm not sure that I won, but yeah, we enjoyed racing up there. Yeah.
I don't know.
You made it more than 2 or 3 rounds. That was something, because he was always out of the first round, so it didn't matter. You made it 3 rounds.
Oh, I've won multiple times at Chandler over the years, but
it must have been at Chandler. Yes, that's, I know you won that night.
The way I race a little differently than you folks that spray and back into and dump and pedal. I cut a good light and run the number. So that's what I try to do. And y'all can just be staring at me and doing whatever you want down there. You're going to have a good run.
Don't get my dad started. First time So a little backstory. The wagon, the Vega wagon was built the year I was born, and Rich Gebhardt built it. And it was one of the first few door cars he'd built. And it's a pretty unique car because it's got, what, is it Mustang 2 or Pinto front end? It's a Pinto front end, right?
Yeah, it's got Pinto control arms and stuff like that. Well, tubular, but they're not just...
And my car is different. It's got a front motor plate. It's got a mid plate. And there's no cross member. There's nothing tying the frame together until you get back to by the drive shaft loop. And it wasn't built for anything like that. It was kind of a unique car whenever you brought it out, because Gebhardt hadn't done a whole lot of door cars, and tube chassis door cars weren't, I mean, they were all Cavaliers and Berettas back then and Chevy 2s and whatnot. And you showed up with a Vega wagon. It was tube chassis, and it did not have a anti-roll bar because it didn't exist back then. And it put a big block in it. I mean, it went 570 something, and it pulled the front down tube off the frame. I think we can all, you know, collectively say our cars have came a long way, and you know, obviously technology's came a long way. And
you're also putting a motor in a car with like a 94-inch wheelbase. So
yeah. Oh, that's where I was going with that story. So I told him one day, or actually I think somebody had dropped parts off, because I bought parts off somebody at the shop during work one day. And he's like, hey, why do you have a nitrous plate? And I'm like, just got a good deal on it. And my grandpa had happened to be sitting there. My grandpa is the most stern, don't push it past the limit, yada, yada, yada. It's going to break. Well, that's where the whole spray with bracket racing came in for me. And it changes the game. And yeah, for people that try hard to make the run look silly, or try hard to drive the finish line and get confused easily, you know, it's a tool, but it's addicting. And it didn't take me long to grenade my dragster. It started breaking valve springs, and it broke probably one every time I got on the button. So I had a whole stack of valve springs in the toolbox, but I got pretty good at changing those. But so the motor that had been in the car for, I don't know, that combination was together probably for 12 or 13 years, been freshened a few times, but it didn't take long for it to snap the crank. Well, was it break the crank? No, it broke the main cap off. I don't know if Billy can enlighten me on what happened.
Push the crank out of the block, you know.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was 150 shot, because the guy gave me the card with it, and it had, you know, obviously it had to put these jets in it, this horsepower, these jets, this horsepower. So I put it together and I sprayed it in the middle of the racetrack for 2.2 seconds. It was, you know, 100 foot to 450 foot probably. And it picked up almost 3/10. I'm like, well, I've only got 150 shot, man. This thing's hauling. Well, come to find out, it was the card he gave me was for a Nitrous Express plate, which is what I had, but it was for a single stage plate. And I had two spray bars in mine.
Wow.
So I put 150 jets all the way around. So it was spraying, you know, half of what the motor already makes. So, It sounded cool.
It was already tweaked out. You know, it was already supposed to make with the block
still,
combination.
Yeah, it was still a 2-volt main 406. So,
oh, mercy.
Oh, yeah. So it pushed the crank out the bottom at the million in 2017, and it's kind of set stagnant since. The engine's almost back together. But, you know, it's one of those things, Billy, that, you know, I'm sure you've been down the same road. Your dad tells you one thing, and you're like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm sure Zach's told you that before, or acted like that before, and it happens, and you're like, just nodding your head, and, you know, told you so.
That thing where you're supposed to, you know, buy good parts the first time. Don't buy something that's cheap and used and try to make some power out of it, because it's going to break. And
I bought a hell of a good nitrous plate.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very efficient.
Yeah.
406 is the worst motor. Absolute worst motor. The 406. It was for taxi cabs that had to have air conditioning. It is a terrible motor. They never put it in trucks. They never used it for anything. And people try to race it, and it's just silly.
Well, I had one guy building it who had since retired, and it was, man, I put 600 runs a year on it. It was no problem. Problem is, I think that I kept pushing the stock block 2-bolt main to its limit, and that was I think what it makes the cylinder walls pretty thin too, right?
Not super strong from the beginning. I mean,
no, they weren't strong at all. They were never designed for that. But I'm glad you had some success.
You got a good one, is all I'm gonna say. You must have had a good block from the beginning, because
yeah, but they are terrible. Yeah, 383 is much stronger.
I don't know what's going together right now. I think it's a 387 five stroke 400 block. So what's that, a 414? That's what I'm going to put together right now, or 415. I don't know what it technically makes it, but.
An aftermarket block, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yep. Dart block.
Wonderful.
No problem. So I can spray it, what you're saying?
We're going to put that in the car. No. I'm going to spray it with about a 350 or 400 shot, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, my. I'm not going to arm the nitrous. That's my dad's going to turn the bottle on thinking he's spraying, hopefully. But anyway, I don't know, Zach, do you have anything more for your dad or mine or anything before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, I think we're good. I think this could go on a lot longer, but I think we've captured some great stuff. It's really been good talking to you guys, and I think it's a good time to wrap it up.
I appreciate you having us.
Yes, me too.
We're recording this a little bit late, but happy Father's Day to you both. I can speak for mine. My dad's done way more than he ever should for me, because I'm just a spoiled ass kid, but. I appreciate, everything my dad's done. And I know, Zach, you feel the exact same way, because I don't think we'd be anywhere near a race car or could have afforded to start on our own or anything like that without, acknowledge expertise and, obviously willing to help.
Yeah, absolutely. No way I'd be doing what I'm doing without him. It's been awesome, racing this whole time with my dad and trying to just figure it out and get better and fix stuff when they break and figure out why and get out there the next time. It's been a lot of fun and just can't wait to see, where it goes from here.
I do have one question. What's the win loss record between you two?
Man,
that's a whole other story.
Another podcast,
well,
there, I think.
One year I had a heart attack in May and had to have open heart surgery and was struggling to get back. And in the meantime, Zach, of course, even though I was in the hospital, he went racing and he's building up all these points at Chandler and is going to try to be track champion. And there's about 2 weeks left, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up in the final. And I guess he thought that I was just going to roll over.
I knew better than that.
I was recovering from this open heart surgery, and I lucked out that night. It was just luck.
I lucked out.
School lucked out. It was a memorable night to be in the final. We've had other plans to be in the final, and one of us wouldn't make it, and one day both of us didn't make it. Mm-hmm. That's the one that I can remember us running in the final. And I'm sure he's beat me multiple times in the eliminations, but you only remember the finals.
I honestly couldn't tell you what our exact record is. I know we've raced. It's not more than just a handful of times because of just trying to avoid each other. And we right. always end up running the same lane, so it's just been so rare. I remember that one for sure. But it's just always been close. I remember Dad turning it red one time whenever we raced. He was trying to take my head off. I think that's just the way that we go. It's definitely not going to be any gimmies if we're racing each other.
Well, at least you didn't dial a car for you, did he?
Oh my! It's all good times. It's all good times. There was wife. My wife and Zach and I, all three, had cars up there at the track at the same time, and that was some of the funnest times in drag racing for me, to have all three of us up there, all novas, all ready to go.
Yeah, if I had three race cars, I can almost put one together probably. But I thank you both for coming on. It's 10 o'clock here, and my boss is kind of an a-hole, so I got to get to work on time in the morning. So. I appreciate you both coming on. Billy, it's good talking to you. Hopefully see you soon. I know you're semi-retired from racing. You'd like to get out a couple times a year, but let me know when you do. I'll stay at the house. Same goes for Zach. There's only been one $10,000 winner on this podcast, as a co-host, and it's not me. So we'll end it with that. Happy Father's Day to you both, and we'll probably all get together soon. I hope so. I hope we got Billy coming up to the Working Man 10 Grands.
There you are.
Nice time for him to break out the shell. We will see you guys, or Billy will see you, and Zach will see you around. And I think this will do it for episode 38, our Father's Day edition episode. And, you know, we're pretty fortunate to have our dads here with us because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't have that luxury, and we get to have ours on the podcast. So I'm pretty thankful for that. And, yeah, we got to have Easton on. You know, it made his night. So happy Father's Day to you, I guess both of you, and my dad. We will we'll see you guys around.
Happy Father's Day to you guys.
Yep, thank you.
All right, nice talking.
See you guys later.
All right, see you later.
A wrap-up for all you guys for episode 38. First of all, thank you all for listening to us. That was a really fun episode to make. It was great to have both of our dads on here. Pete was awesome. My dad, Billy, was awesome. Easton, he's an awesome dude. So, hope you all enjoyed the interview. Wanted to give a shout-out real quick. I'm not going to do a final round this week, but did want to say thanks to InMotion Solutions for supporting our podcast. Our stickers, they look awesome. You know, we got them through InMotion Solutions. So, if you guys need any decals made, make sure you hit up Jeff Serra with InMotion Solutions and have him hook you up with some amazing decals, stickers, any type of graphics that you want. And I mean, just to kind of, I know we really didn't talk any of our own racing over the last week. Last weekend, I went down to Music City Raceway with the Siebert Performance Throwdown Motorsport Chevy 2. Ran down there in their 5-grander for Super Pro. Awesome track, by the way. If you've never been there, it is really cool. Not something you ever want to go to off the end of. I wouldn't recommend racing a car. 450s is really pushing it. Jason Lynch does it, of course. Some of the other ones do it, but it's pushing it. But awesome racetrack, awesome surface. Had a great time. Just didn't do very well. So third round, bowed out. My buddy Chad Axford, Axe Daddy. I don't know if you saw my time slip I posted on Facebook, but check it out on my Facebook page. Basically, I took the stripe by 3 thou and I had to take the stripe by 1 thou or less. I broke out by 2 thou, so close race. Me and Chad have had to race like 28 times this year, so hopefully we'll quit doing that here sometimes here soon. So I want to say thanks to everybody again for listening, sharing, liking this. We really appreciate it. Big things happening for us here, and that's thanks to all of you tuning in. Thanks a lot again for tuning in. I have stickers for sale, $10 a set. You know, you send me the money PayPal and I will ship them out to you ASAP. I've got stacks of them here ready to go. So put those on your car. We'd love to see the support. Thank you all very much for listening, and everybody be safe this weekend wherever you're racing, and we will see you in the lanes.